Could it be that the alien abduction phenomena is about a spiritual awakening as opposed to experimentation? That's just one of the things to think about. We're going live down under to Australia. Mary Rodwell back with us on Coast to Coast, and that's next. And welcome back to Coast. Let me tell you about Mary Rodwell, founding member of FREE, which is the Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. She's a counselor, hypnotherapist, ufologist, researcher, metaphysician, former registered nurse and midwife in the United Kingdom. Mary's also the founder and principal of ACERN, which is the Australian Close Encounter Resource Network, and is recognized internationally as one of the leading researchers in the UFO and contact phenomenon. She's the author of numerous articles and a book entitled Awakening, How Extraterrestrial Contact Can Transform Your Life. She was on with our colleague George Knapp about 3 years ago. Mary, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
I'm looking forward to this. How are things in Australia?
Well, a bit wet outside at the moment, but we are in the winter time, but it's not too cold because where I am is subtropical.
Oh, that's great. How did you get involved in this kind of field, the extraterrestrial UFO field? How did that happen?
Well, it's one of those interesting synchronicities, you know. Let's put it like this. I've always been interested in the weird and the wonderful. So, you know, if it was weird and wonderful, I had a book on it. And it happened that a few weeks before my very first gentleman walked through the door, I'd read two books. One was Abduction, Human Encounters with Aliens, with, that lovely gentleman, Dr. John Mack, who was the professor of psychiatry at Harvard University, and that was very profound to read that he'd come in as a skeptic, did all the psychological testing, and concluded, especially when he wrote Passport to the Cosmos as well. But I also read Communion, which everybody...
Whitley Strieber.
Whitley Strieber. So those were the two that I was set up with, and a few weeks later, literally, a gentleman walked through the door. And he said, I've heard you're open-minded. For this, there's no support groups. For this, they just think you're a loony. And proceeded to tell me he'd wake up with marks on his body, shaved areas. His partner was having experiences. The children were having experiences. And he said, and people won't come to the house because they think it's demons. So that was my introduction to all of this. And then when 2 weeks later, another lady walked through the door having similar experiences. And since then, nearly 3,500 people later, families and children, etc., globally. This is where I'm at, you know, called the alien lady. So there you go.
Did you have, Mary, that aha moment where you went from maybe a skeptic or a non-believer to, I believe this 100%?
I think it was a process, to be honest. It was just that when you kept getting more and more people saying the same thing, the same patterns of experience, you know, it was like, well, if this is real, then this is what you're going to get. Whereas if it's hallucination or a fantasy, that, you know, they're all going to be slightly different. There's going to be fantasy woven in. And there's lots of things, as you well know, as a researcher yourself, that there are subtle things that people that aren't written about that are very crucial to this experience. And I got to see those very subtle things as you're asking about it. And you know when the media say to me, well, do you believe them? And I say to myself, do you think people would travel halfway across the country or come from another country spending all that money to tell me, a fantasy? Because I'm not going to make them rich and, you know, or I'm not going to make them famous. Now, would you do that? You know, what would be
exactly
the motivation? You know, come on.
And once you rule out insanity, once you rule out lying, you have to come up to the conclusion that there's something very real about all of this.
Absolutely. And for me, it was one of the crucial things, being a therapist, before I was really a researcher, was how it changed people. And you don't change in these incredible ways unless something very real has happened. You don't change after a hallucination where your whole motivation in life is different, where you lose interest in materialistic values, your diet changes, the way that you think about people, think about the planet. All these kinds of transformative changes do not happen unless something very real has happened to you.
Absolutely. Do you recall one of the original abduction cases, Mary, from the early 60s, the Barney and Betty Hill case in New Hampshire?
Absolutely. I mean, that's a classic one, isn't it?
It sure is. That, as a little boy, is one of the reasons I got so interested in UFOs and that entire field. I mean, I just, you know, the book came out, The Interrupted Journey, and I just couldn't put it down. It was just so much. And then Look Magazine, we had a big magazine called Look Magazine in the United States at the time, and they came out with a front cover about this case too, and I was just hooked. And like you, I can't stop. And you,
I think once you've got the bug, there's really not a lot you can do. But I think it, for me, it was the mystery, wanting to understand if this is real, what does it actually mean for me as a person and for humanity? And that's when you really start to explore it. And that was the fascinating thing, because I could see when I let go of all my preconceived ideas and the education that is so limited in terms of what's going on this planet, who we are, what we are, all that, I then discovered there were so many links that tell us about how real this actually is. And that was right from the DNA right through to the reason we're being visited.
We're with Mary Rodwell, her books, Awakening, How Extraterrestrial Contact Can Transform Your Life. Also, The New Human, Awakening to Our Cosmic Heritage. And we're going to get into a lot of things of what this all means, Mary. Is there one case that you remember of an individual or a group or a family that just stands out as one of the most incredible stories you've ever heard?
I'm getting many, many cases that seem to be incredible. And I've been asked this a lot, and I wish I could say there's one. But for me, what's been incredible is how many incredible stories are out there that I'm coming across nowadays.
Give us one that would just drive us crazy.
Right. Well, I'll give you one of the most recent, because I'm going to speak in Brazil again.
Okay.
Because my book is in Portuguese, the second one.
Oh, good for you.
What this is a former air hostess who told me that she'd been aware as a child that there was this tall being that used to visit her that was a cat-like being. But nothing prepared her when working as an air hostess. She was going down the passageway in a hotel, and she saw this little girl, and she thought she was, she was lost. So she went up to her to ask her, well, where's your mother? Can I help you find your mother? And as this little girl turned round, she was part human, part feline. And the air hostess was so shocked that she ran away in thinking she's a monster. What happened was that a few years later, she was taken up on board craft, and she saw this little being, this hybrid being, part human and part feline, and she realized that was actually one of her hybrid daughters.
Wow.
Not only that, there were a whole range of other hybrid children that were hers. But what was even more astounding was she was then seeing her six-year-old on board craft playing with her hybrid sister on board craft. And what was even more spooky for her was she getting in her head, your six-year-old daughter's a hybrid. And she said to me, what really made it very tangible was her husband, a few days later after she'd got this information, woke up in the middle of the night and shouted out, you realize our daughter's a hybrid, don't you? She's one of the mantid. Right out of the blue.
Wow.
He comes out with this. And she's still coming to terms with the fact that her daughter is actually playing with her hybrid siblings on board spacecraft. I mean, this is one of the latest ones to do with all the hybridization that's going on this planet as well as off planet as well. But that's just one little, snippet of one story that is actually a Brazilian air hostess.
That's a great story. And Mary, I got to tell you, I'm so glad that we have you on this planet doing the work that you're doing. Because, you know, as you mentioned, John Mack and then the late Bud Hopkins, we've lost so many great researchers in this field. We need you. And I thank God you're around to do this for us.
Well, thank you. But I think that I'm very blessed on another level, because I've always said that through this work, I get to meet the most aware and beautiful people on the planet. So, you know, there's a good game there.
Sure is. Now, your organization, Australian Close Encounter Resource Network, tell me about that.
Well, that was created because what I discovered from that first gentleman who I've written about, and he's a really good friend who lives in England now, because he came and presented himself, then this other lady presented herself. I then met a social worker, and her story was fascinating because, being a social worker, she's very aware of mental health, etc. And she started to see beings in her house and thought, well, I'm definitely going crazy, until somebody, a friend of hers, walked through the door, who knocked on the door and came in the house and said, do you realize there's some strange beings in your lounge room? And she said, well, can you see them as well? And she said, oh, yes, I can see them. And from that, I connected with her, and we started up the very first support group, where 12 people ended up coming to that. And then I realized, you know what, this isn't rare. This is actually a lot more common than I'd ever realized. And that was really the big, it sort of was the light bulb moment. I have to do something, because, you know, when people are so afraid that they're scared to go to your conventional support, the psychologist or the psychiatrist, they may even be questioning that they're crazy as well.
Oh, there's no question about it. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you do? So I thought, well, I'm a professional counselor. I've done hypnosis. I've got all those life skills. I've done grief and bereavement. I've done all the range of what I call the normal human experiences. But how can I help? How can I support those that are having this experience? And that was when I created ACERN, because many want to go to someone who's a professional that is understanding what's going on, or at least has a sense of what's going on. And there just wasn't anything. And the UFO groups are great. They help people on one level, because, you know, at least they can talk about their sightings. They can talk about, you know, how real is
right.
this.
Without belittling the people.
That's exactly right. But very few have the skills to help them into understanding what's going on. And as you well know, we talk about consciousness. The whole thing that we've learned with Free is that with the 4,200 that did the surveys, that we've discovered that 25% of this is nuts and bolts physical, but 75% is non-physical. It's about consciousness. It's about going often onto these craft in a non-physical form. So how do you quantify that? How do you explain that? And the only way is through understanding or looking at the patterns of experience, because they can't bring bits of the craft back. You know, they can't bring their new friend, you know, the new little Zeta that's on the board craft. And so where is the tangibility? But there is something else that I found quite fascinating, and anyone who knows about my work will understand this, is how they start to do a lot of really unusual creative expressions. And that includes artwork, it includes writing symbols, scripts, and coming out with unusual languages as well, which, you know, is called light language, universal languages. And it's not just the adults that are doing this. I've got children that have started speaking these languages to their parents at 6 and 7 years old. And the parents saying, but what are you speaking? But this is part of, they will say, this is from my family or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't start coming out with these unusual expressions unless, again, something very significant is going on in your reality.
Mary, have you had a case or two, or you probably have had many, where the individuals are just losing it because of what's happening? Maybe they don't understand what's happening, but they can't handle it?
Absolutely. And some have come to me after they've been, you know, going through the general way that we deal with anything that is out of the ordinary. We go to the psychologist or we go to the psychiatrist, and of course we know how it is judged, but it can be so traumatic that it does tip them over the edge, particularly if they've got no one to talk to and they feel isolated. And that's probably the biggest of all, is for most people, they may say to me, they might be in their 60s even or 70s, and say, you know, I've never been able to talk about this. You know, I might have said something to my parents or my mum when I was little, but she'd say that's not real, or, you know, stop imagining things or whatever. So they shut down, but they still end up having things happen. They can't quantify, they can't explain. And, you know, the partner doesn't want to hear it, or, you know, oh, stop talking about that. You know that that's weird and it freaks me out, because people are scared. They don't know what to do with it. And it gets to a point with some of them where they really do lose it. And, you know, they'll come to me afterwards and they may be, you know, quite medicated because of that. And it's been the only thing that's kept them on the track to a certain extent. But the thing that then upsets them, and I write on a whole chapter on a young lady called Kathy in Awakening. And Kathy came to me when she was 19, and she said, I finally realize I'm not crazy, because I saw a talk show on the television, and they were talking about these experiences like mine. When I was 14, I went to my GP, told him I was seeing aliens. He said, there's no such thing. You're hallucinating. You're a psychotic, and gave her this cocktail of medications. Several times she nearly committed suicide. And then it was only because she saw this on a talk show that she got in touch with me and said, I think this is real. But do you know what? That the problem for her was that when she finally accepted it might be real, then she had to face that for all those years she's been taking this toxic, you know, these toxic drugs that have made her feel so ill and suicidal. So you've got that huge thing going on. And honestly, I believe there are very likely not only thousands, but millions of people that think they're going crazy because of the whole truth embargo. And that is, you know, that is shameful. Absolutely shameful.
And you take a therapeutic approach much different than most people.
Well, I mean, I still follow the mandate of my counseling, which is, you know, client-centered counseling by Carl Rogers is what I was trained in. And so I don't deviate from that. But what Carl Rogers was saying is you honor the person's understanding of themselves and their own wisdom and experience. I probably take it to the nth degree, I might add, because if they start experiencing going to parallel universes and other dimensions, I don't think Carl Rogers expected it to be taken to that. But I've always come from the understanding you don't know what you don't know. And if someone's coming out with something extraordinary, it doesn't mean that it's not true. It just means that I haven't been exposed to it yet, perhaps. So open-mindedness does not equate to gullibility. It means you're open to what you don't know. So if something is incredible for me, what I do is I put it in a box and say, right, if I get any more information on that, then I'll look at it again or whatever. Because things like missing pregnancies 20 years ago when I got into this, or 25 years ago, it was still considered really unusual and strange, and perhaps, you know, people were getting a bit carried away. Now it's one of those things, oh, yeah, so you have missing pregnancies as well. We understand what is going on with missing pregnancies now, and more about the hybridization that's going on board craft, as well as down here, of course. We know that we're up to mischief down here as well. It's not just, you know, in the covert programs and whatever. But what I say is, for me, is their experience is their experience. Tell me about it and tell me how you need to understand it. So I'm really just allowing them the freedom, without the judgment, to say how they understand their reality. And from that, hopefully they can get some integration and some balance and a way of moving forward, which is, you know, classic therapeutic process. It's no different to any other life experience.
Absolutely. Now, FREE, the other organization, Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial and Extraordinary Experiences, what was Dr. Edgar Mitchell, our dear friend, the late astronaut, what was his connection with this?
Well, this was a series of synchronicities, and Ray Hernandez has told the story many times, who obviously is a really good friend and colleague now. It was really interesting that his story came up many months after he'd sent it to me. For some reason, I'd completely missed it. And I feel really bad, because I always try and answer all the emails within, you know, a week at least, if I can.
Good for you. Hold on for a second, Mary. We're going to hit a break here, but we'll come right back and pick it up right here. In the next hour, we'll take phone calls with Mary Rodwell right here on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with Mary Rodwell, her book, Awakening, How Extraterrestrial Contact Can Transform Your Life. Her websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Mary, we're talking about the Edgar Mitchell tie-in. I'll let you finish that part of it.
Thank you. The most important thing with the whole way it happened was one of those beautiful synchronicities. And because Ray, I finally got back to Ray, he told me his incredible story and how things had changed for him, you know, a real paradigm shift and said, I've got this feeling we've got to start something up, something scientific, something where we can start doing the research. And I said, well, I'm all for that. And he said, do you know a physicist or an astrophysicist? And I said, well, I know Dr. Rudy Shield, who's a friend of mine and a wonderful colleague. And he said, well, do you think you could introduce me? And I said, well, send me your bio. I sent it on to Rudy, and within less than, you know, 24 hours, he'd contacted Ray and then said, I can connect you to Dr. Edgar Mitchell. And literally within the space of a couple of days, Ray was talking to Dr. Edgar Mitchell. And
that
was really so significant, because we all know that Dr. Mitchell was always into consciousness. He was always into how that ties in. And he was very, very supportive from the get-go into having something where we can actually tie this all together. I mean, Ray, you know, talks about the contact modalities. The great thing was, with Dr. Rudy Shield talking about how we can understand this through the quantum hologram. So there is the scientific way in to understanding this. And also with the understanding from Dr. Edgar Mitchell and his experiences, etc., we realized how everything ties into this. And that was when we got Dr. Klimo got involved as a professor of psychology, with Dr. Bob Davis, who is the neuroscientist, and a whole range of wonderful researchers, Kathleen Marden, etc., putting together this 600 questionnaire, which was never done before, as you well know. It's the first time that any kind of really comprehensive survey was done. And of course, since then, we've got the book Beyond UFOs, where you've got this data, the statistics, which are mind-blowing, because we'd never had that before. Even with the smaller kinds of surveys, we didn't have the depth of understanding from conscious recall of all these thousands of people. And that in itself has changed the way that we look at the whole phenomena. But for me, it was final validation that extraterrestrial contact does actually transform your life, because 85% of them were saying that they had a psycho-spiritual transformation. And this was, you know, for me, this was just incredible to see that my own research was being validated in such an incredible way by the free research. And of course, we're going on now to looking at more of the science, et cetera. Also, the many other sides to this, and how many different types of being people see, for example, how they understand themselves. And of course, the other important thing is that people who had near-death experiences, 40-odd%, started to see non-human intelligences. We also found that people doing shamanic had shamanic experiences, or those out-of-body experiences, or remote viewing, or those that were learning healing, for example, would suddenly start to see non-human intelligences. You know, meditation, they'd start to be aware of non-human intelligences. People who were, you know, channeling, for example, were seeing them. So this whole panorama was not just about, you know, UOPs, you know, UFOs for the rest of you. It's not just about sighting these craft. It's actually about human shifting into a higher awareness, where they start to see the non-physical realm, including spirits, orbs, you know, orbs of light, energy fields. All this phenomena is because we get activated on some level, or our senses or our consciousness is heightened, and then we see all of it. It's not just, you know, angels and fairies and elementals. It's blue beings with black eyes. And some people will say, well, I'm seeing an angel. Somebody else will say, I'm seeing a light being. I suspect they're the same thing. It's just that it is all interconnected, and it's all to do with consciousness. And that has been, to me, the most brilliant light bulb moment.
When I had a chance to interview and talk with Edgar Mitchell, and we became friends, Mary, he wrote a book called The Way of the Explorer about his metaphysical involvement, going to space, going to the moon, and everything else. But I remember he distinctly told me, and I asked him specifically, I said, Edgar, have you ever seen a UFO? Did you see a UFO on the moon? He said, no, I haven't. But I'm going to tell you this. I've been told by people in government that we are being visited. And when you hear that from an Apollo 14 astronaut, somebody who's been on the moon, who's looking you right in the eyes, you got to believe that story. And it was incredible.
Oh, absolutely, George. You know, for me, it's just, you know, I have seen things myself I can't explain. I mean, I'm looking at video footage being sent to me from even some of the local papers saying, Mary, what do you make of this? You know, is it something that would interest you or whatever? But, you know, the statistics are one every 6 minutes around the globe, somebody's seeing a UFO or someone's, you know, got video footage. But the thing that was interesting to me, George, was that people were ringing me up about their sightings. And I would say to them, did you feel differently afterwards? Or was, you know, were you aware of that? And what I've discovered is that many people that are sighting these craft are actually having some form of contact, even if they're not conscious of it at the time. Because we do know now that that can happen. There can be an instant download, or they can even be picked up. They think a few minutes has gone by, but we do know that, that there is an ability to stretch time or to condense time as well. So that's another part of it. So I always send them one of my questionnaires and say, you've seen this? Oh, yeah. And one young man only a few days ago rang me up and said, these lights keep following me, Mary. He said that they're sort of orbits of light, and they're like they're watching me and what have you. And so I got him to expand on that, and I said, well, can you tell me more about the lights? You know, yes, yeah, sometimes they go blue, red, and green. I'm going, right, okay, you know, it sounds very much like it might be one of these things we call UFOs. Yes, he said, I think it might be, he goes. And then I said, did you feel differently afterwards? And he said, I said, sometimes you may feel a bit more sensitive to things, see things that most people don't see. And he said, ah, yes, that's true, he goes. That's exactly what's been going on. And, it, you know, to me, it's just they're so afraid of actually saying, look, I think this is what it is, because they don't know how I'm going to respond to them. And I sort of lead them along until they, and it's plainly obvious to me, this young man has been having, you know, experiences or whatever. But, you know, the bottom line is that it's interesting. If somebody sees a UFO, it does seem that in many cases it's not just a sighting. It's almost like the family is saying, hi, yep, we're here. Are you ready to acknowledge us now?
It's like an event. You know, you were talking about missing pregnancies. What are the ETs doing with the hybrid babies? What are they doing with them? What's your take?
Well, I'll tell you what an eight-year-old told me when she talked to me over Skype about a year ago, and this was actually in The New Human. I think I put it in there.
An eight-year-old. Okay.
She told me that when they took her a few nights previously, she wanted to tell me this. She's from the U.S., and she said, Mary, they took me to a planet first, and they showed me how to levitate, and they showed me how to use my psychic abilities. Then they took me to a ship, and they showed me genetic engineering, and they told me why they were doing it between different species, different plants, different animals. She said, because they told me they are seeding other planets in this universe and other universes, and so they need different genetic mixes. So all that's going on there, she was being shown this by the beings, that this is part of the program. And she's not the only one. Another lady recently told me that the mantis beings, she was being shown by the mantis beings some of their genetic engineering on board craft. And she said, and it was a mantis and a benevolent, she said, reptilian. And they were showing them all these hybrids that they were actually bringing up in these kind of incubators. And the mantis said, we are the master geneticists. We're the ones that orchestrate all the genetic mixes and what have you. That's just two stories, one from an eight-year-old and one from a lady in her 40s that have seen and been shown what they're doing. And it seems that they're continually mixing different DNA to get certain qualities, certain programs or abilities of particular beings and humanoids and all the different kinds. You know, we know there's all sorts of different kinds of beings now, and it depends then on what kind of environment they're taken to so they can survive. So this is a huge program of galactic seeding that's going on right across not just this universe, but apparently other universes as well.
Dr. David Jacobs believes that all of this is kind of nefarious, that it is not good. For example, that the hybrid program could be used to take over the planet one day, Earth, and get rid of all of us. Possible?
Well, let's put it like this, George. We're already taking over the planet because we're all hybrids, for a start.
From the get-go.
I always say we've already taken over the planet because we've been genetically engineered, I believe, absolutely, from all the research that I've done, talked to geneticists. Dr. Francis Crick alone mentioned the fact that he believed that we were intelligently designed. So, we have taken over the planet already. So, what's the big deal? What I do think is going on, though, is an upgrade of humans into different programs of hybrid. And that is because what I'm understanding is that what's going on is the concern they have for what we're doing on this planet right now. And I believe it's a kind of upgrade in consciousness so that we, what did we do? We had technology that could actually destroy this planet. They are very concerned, these beings that are saying to those that have experiences, you've got to stop this happening. You've got to stop polluting the planet using this technology because, it's like a three-year-old being given a loaded gun and not knowing it can kill. What they're doing is an accelerated, I believe, shift in terms of getting us to wake up and realize the consequences of what we're doing from a spiritual perspective so that we can then join them, as a more awake humanity, if you like, to join them in this cosmic community. So when we look at the children of experiences, and we know they come through genetic lines, we've seen that in all our research that, if you've got someone coming to you that's having experiences, it's very likely many of the siblings will, mum and dad or mum or dad or grandparents, you can see the family lines and you always, I can isolate that simply, granddad was always interested in UFOs, there's the family line. And then you come to the new children that are coming in, which is what I wrote The New Human about. Was because the new children coming in are different and even more aware and even more intuitive, even more multidimensionally aware or more psychic, if you like. And I was really looking at that upgrade and wondering just what's actually going on. Why do they appear to be dysfunctional? And what I discovered was that the experiences that got in touch with me saying my son's, got ADHD or my son's got Asperger's or dyslexia or et cetera, et cetera. And it didn't make sense that they would be more dysfunctional than the parent unless they weren't dysfunctional and it was more that we were the dysfunctional ones because what I saw was, and I talked to a lovely guy, and I don't know if you've ever had him on, Neil Gold, who's a ufologist in Hong Kong, and he wrote a book, Close Encounters of the ADHD Kind, because he discovered when he was 50 that he was actually ADHD, because he said, I always saw reality in a more expanded way than anyone else, Mary, and he said, and I was taught by the light beings. And I realized that the ADHD, which he retranslates into always dialed into higher dimensions. So these ADHD children are the upgrade. They operate faster. And what do? We slow them down with Ritalin because we want to program into this inaccurate and limited paradigm, this 3D, when in fact they're multidimensional. So they can't, they don't get it unless we slow them down because they are the upgrade. So the ADHD is the new, is part of the new human or new humanity. And so is Asperger's, I believe. And so I believe is the dyslexic because they're harder to program into an inaccurate paradigm, which the rest of us have unfortunately been programmed into. So we're the ones that need the upgrade. And I believe that they're coming in and they will help with that, that, the older models will be slowly assisted to upgrade as well. But they are the new human, and that is how we know it. And interestingly, with some forms of autism, we know that autism, and some of it may certainly be caused by other things, but not all of it. I believe some of it is because they are also a form of upgrade, but only certain forms, because obviously I think there are other reasons why we're getting autistic kids as well. So, that's, but to me, that was so obvious when I started to talk to people like Neil and them saying they saw an expanded reality. These children, honestly, George, amaze me what they tell me they can see and perceive.
Oh, it's incredible.
About themselves. It's just amazing.
So these upgrades that have been ongoing, let me ask you this, and this is not to negate the belief in God at all, but when you look at Genesis, if you look at it with the perspective, Mary, of extraterrestrials coming down, that God made us in his own image, ETs made us in their own image, is that a possibility?
Oh, absolutely. Interestingly, I was talking to a young Indian boy, a young Indian man, should I say, that I wrote about him. He said to me, Mary, I know I'm a starseed. He said, but my countrymen and my relatives and family are all still, they all believe these are gods, he said, in my culture. He said, we've got about 100 gods. And they worship them. He said, I know they're extraterrestrials, Mary. How on earth can I tell my family and those around me that you're worshiping extraterrestrials? Because he knows. He absolutely knows. So this whole thing about the gods, and I find it incredible. What we've got to really do is put a modern take on understanding if we went back in time 200 years with our technology, we would be seen as gods. Everything would
absolutely
be miraculous.
Absolutely. You know? Cell phones sending pictures to each other. They'd think we were gods. Stay with us, Mary. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and take calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM.